call the meeting to order, and I'd like to welcome all of you here to the Board of Trustees meeting. I'll have some comments that I would normally make now, I'll make later in the board chair report. So we'll start off here with roll call.
Mr. Dano? Mr. Dively?
Here.
Mr. Getz?
Here.
Mr. Hutchison? Mr. Cradaville?
Here.
Mr. Shirley?
Here.
Dr. Webb?
Here.
Mr. Welch?
Here.
Thank you. Okay, now we have a motion, Mr. Welch. Go into executive
session.
I move
that the board convene an executive session to consider collective negotiating matters as permitted by Section 2C2 of the Open Meeting Act and pending probable or imminent litigation as permitted by Section 2C11 of the Open Meetings Act. And finally, executive session minutes as permitted by Section 2C21 of the Open Meetings Act.
Thank you, Trustee Welch. We have a second?
Second.
Second. Any questions, comment? Roll call.
Mr. Dively?
Yes.
Mr. Getz?
Yes.
Mr. Cradaville?
Yes.
Mr. Shirley?
Yes.
Dr. Webb?
Yes.
Mr. Welch?
Yes.
Okay, we're back in regular session, and we'll be going to the action items, which the A is approval of minutes. I have a motion to approve the minutes.
So move.
So move. Second?
Second.
Second. Any questions, comments on the minutes? Roll call.
Mr. Dively?
Yes.
Mr. Getz?
Yes.
Mr. Cradaville?
Yes.
Mr. Shirley?
Yes.
Dr. Webb?
Yes.
Mr. Welch?
Yes.
Okay, item B, executive session minutes, and Brad, you got any comment on that?
No, we reviewed them in executive session, and no action to be taken now.
Okay, thank you. We'll go down to C, FY13 budget approval, FY14 budget submission. The administration and the Board of Trustees, Vice President, spent quite a bit of time this morning going through this budget, the ups and downs and all this about it. And so now we'll turn it over to Mr. Weber to comment on this.
Yes, thank you. The board will find the full FY13 budget and FY14 budget request on pages 3 through 50 of your board book. Have a short presentation. So again, we're looking at the upcoming year's budget and the following year's budget request to make to the state. And as I was preparing the presentation, I started with where we ended last year's presentation. When we were at the June meeting last year, we presented this plan to you for ensuring a sustainable future, that these were the things we'd be focusing on as we went forward. And indeed, that's what we've done. We've continued with conservative budgeting. The Integrative Learning Initiative in Academic Affairs is going strong. The board approved our strategic plan last month, and now we're moving into an implementation phase. We successfully got permission to expand waivers as part of the Panther Promise, and our capital campaign is exceeding expectations. And so with that reminder, let me set a little context for the upcoming budgets. As we look at our strengths, we're developing a new signature in the area of sustainable energy with the Renewable Energy Center and the Center for Clean Energy Research and Education. Our satisfaction levels and our students' employment levels continue to be high. And we've been receiving numerous recognitions. Professor Rabin as the Illinois Case Professor of the Year. Jonathan Jones receiving a Goldwater scholarship, the second Goldwater we've received in a handful of years. Bridget Sanchez being recognized as one of the finalists for the Arthur Ashe Sports Scholars. And EIU's Graduate School being recognized by the Council on Graduate Studies and the Educational Testing Service with an award for innovation. First time that award's been given to a university of our type. So we have many strengths going forward. Threats, we continue to have a fairly weak economy that's rather debt heavy. This is an unemployment map and was projected last year. Illinois is trailing the field in terms of the level of employment. So we continue to struggle with that. Not only is our state funding delayed, and we're continuing to deal with that threat, but it's, as you'll see from the budget, our state funding is also declining. And then a new threat that we didn't mention last year, but it's certainly worth mentioning this year, is in higher education, there is new disruptive competition from all directions. Kind of at the top elite level, you have Udacity, which is focusing on MOOCs, M-O-O-C, massive open online courses. The courses that Udacity offers enroll 160,000 students at a shot, and these courses are free. They're turning the tuition model on its head. Udacity thinks it's going to get its money from businesses who Udacity can recommend students to. You also have Tutor. If you've not heard of Tutor, Tutor is working with premier universities across the country, cherry-picking their elite programs and scaling them up so that instead of having 160 students in an elite program, you now have 16,000 students in that program. So that's disruptive competition from the upper end. But you're also getting competition from the lower end. Straighter Line is offering bread-and-butter gen ed courses, and they're offering them basically dirt cheap. You can subscribe to Straighter Line, and for $39 a course, take as many courses as you can as you're a member. Or you can simply pay them a flat amount, around $99 or so, for a basic general education course. And then even nonprofits like Khan Academy are getting into the game. They're a nonprofit startup trying to offer education online to everyone. So you have lots of disruptive competition out there that's not going to wait for brick-and-mortar universities to play catch-up. So that's the context I want to give you in setting up our overview of the FY13 budget and our FY14 budget request. In terms of projected revenues, our general revenue funding, we expect it to be right at $44 million at this point. That is a significant cut from last year, a little over 6%. That cut, however, was moderated by the performance-based funding that at least helped us get a little tick of our budget back. We also project our tuition, net of waivers, to be down from this year because we are transitioning our tuition model. With the Panther Promise authorized by the legislature for us to give more waivers than usual, and with our commitment to excellence, where we're implementing a tiered set of scholarships for incoming students, we expect our net tuition to be down a bit from last year. Non-appropriated funds, gifts and grants, pretty steady for a total all funds budget of just under $217 million. So that's our projected revenues. Let me remind you of the trend in appropriated revenues. By appropriated, I mean the general revenue funding we get from the state, along with the income fund that we get from tuition. Again, very different picture 10 years ago. The mix was about two-thirds state funding, one-third tuition. And that changed. It went to about 50-50 around FY08 or so. And now you can see it's getting very rapidly to one-third, two-thirds the other direction. But again, you can see that we're facing a trend in declining state funding. And as we implement new scholarships and new waiver programs, we think our income fund is going to be moderating as well. And so some tight times are ahead for us. In terms of expenditures, the operating and personnel breakdown, similar to what we've seen in past years, in our appropriated funds, we spend about 4 out of every 5 of those dollars on people, and the other 1 out of $5 on operating. It's closer to 50-50 over when you look at all funds. But I don't see any significant changes in those patterns. Some of the expenditure highlights. Again, we are presenting you with a balanced budget. As we've been managing the cash flow situation from the state, we do not spend money we do not have. We had a significant retirement bubble this year. Nearly 130 retirements this past year, around 6 to 7% of our labor force. And of course, not all of those are going to be rehired instantly, and we may be able to cut a few positions through attrition to help moderate our personal services costs. We have been seeing some modest cash flow improvements from the state. The state's still ending the year without giving us our full appropriation, but the amount that they're behind has been declining. One of the ways we've been managing the cash flow situation is through capital reserves, and that's been some significant expenditures on permanent improvements, and so those are going to get scaled back as our cash flow improves and we move into these new fiscal years. And then, of course, significantly increased scholarship awards as we implement some of the Noel Levitt's recommendations and try to boost our enrollments. So those are some highlights of the FY13 budget expenditures. Moving on to FY14 and what we will be requesting with your approval, what we project, our assumptions here, is that as we implement the Noel Levitt's recommendations, there'll be further increases in waivers and scholarships. As that happens, there's going to be just modest growth in our income fund, net of waivers, because while tuition may increase, some of that's going to be offset by these waivers and scholarships. We'll continue reallocating away from personal permanent improvements and compensated absences. Compensated absences refers to the payouts that we make when somebody retires. They get paid for part of their unused sick leave and their unused accrued leave. As we have gone through this retirement bubble, we expect our compensated absence costs will moderate more to historical levels, and so we will adjust the budgets accordingly. And as I previously mentioned, permanent improvements, we expect to do less in the way of capital reserves as the cash flow situation improves. We are assuming that we need to start as a foundation with a balanced budget plan under the assumption that state funding will remain flat. But you don't get additional state funding unless you ask for it, and so we will certainly ask for additional state funding for FY14, and should we be fortunate enough to receive it, it'll be used to either moderate any tuition increases or possibly fund some of the program priority requests that we have. All of our new dollar requests for FY14 are in the form of program priority requests, and we have offered the state in these program priority requests various options for addressing the IBHE's public agenda and the educational needs here in Illinois. So these top four you've seen before. We have asked for these four items every year for a good 10 years now. We continue to ask for additional academic-based support, additional help for deferred maintenance, additional help to enhance technology, and additional help for diversity programming. But we decided this year to add a few other items that the state might be interested in, including some lower-ticket items. So we have CENSEER, the Center on Clean Energy Research and Education. We also have the idea of starting CLOSE, Center for Locally Sustainable Entrepreneurship. I hope I got that acronym right. We've had great success with our Student Success Center in working with students who fall out of academic standing and returning them to solid academic standing. We have just had tremendous success working with that, so we have various ideas to enhance those programs and help student achievement. And then also we're proposing an idea of starting up a student wellness center as more and more students come to us with various issues that they have to deal with. So in terms of new monies, we have $10.5 million of ideas that would support the state's educational goals should there be any additional monies to fund them. Again, I'm not overly optimistic for the odds there, but if you don't ask, you certainly won't get any new funding. So our overall budget request for FY14, we're going to assume a base appropriation holding steady at $44 million. Our income fund, we assume it's slightly larger than FY13, but not greatly larger, as again, the new waiver and scholarship programs will moderate any increase in income funds. And then we're asking, on top of our usual funding, we're asking for $10.5 million in new funding, which we would be very fortunate to get. So our total budget request that we would like to send to the state would be for $120.8 million for our appropriation. Our budget request for FY14, as it does every year, includes various capital requests. And these capital requests are basically unchanged from last year, other than updating the numbers. A new science building continues to be our number one priority in terms of new capital requests. And total funding for that would be about $101 million. A bit over $80 million for the first year, and then another $20 million for further years. Also part of our campus master plan is to repurpose the old steam plant and add an addition to that to house our various student services and technology. So that's also repeated from last year with the number updated accordingly. We have quite a bit of needs in terms of utilities infrastructure. And we really could use some funding to assist us on upgrading that infrastructure. And then we have the Life Science and Coleman Hall HVAC and plumbing project. And as we wait for the funding to be released on that project that was previously approved, the costs keep escalating. And so in our capital request, we have a request for escalation costs should the money for that project ever be released. So our total capital budget request in terms of regular capital projects like the one I just mentioned, there's $175 million total of those requests, along with some smaller capital renewal projects at $2.9 million for a total capital request of $178.2 million. So what's ahead for us, assuming you approve the FY13 budget and our FY14 budget request? Well, what's ahead is we have a strategic plan in place, and now it's time to start implementing that And that'll, of course, be a major topic of discussion at the upcoming Board of Trustees retreat. Funds are limited, and when funds are limited, you really have to focus. And so we're going to be putting together a framework in accordance with what was suggested in the strategic plan to prioritize what it is we're doing, try to figure out what we can stop doing, and that prioritization has to be very strongly connected to our mission. Also part of the strategic plan is we'll be moving in forward with it, continuing to enhance our marketing efforts, and as we move forward, we'll be restructuring that area and adding an assistant vice president in charge of integrated marketing and communication, also in alignment with our strategic plan. Also part of our strategic plan is setting up these tiered scholarships and waiver programs and really targeting our tuition model, transitioning it to a new structure where we try to use our financial aid to enhance our yield. And then finally, again, our science building is our number one capital priority, and so we'll need to continue lobbying for state support for that project. So that is my presentation on the FY13 budget and FY14 budget request. And at this time, I'd be glad to take any questions that the board may have. Thank you.
Okay, at this moment, do we need a motion to accept the budget before we have the discussion? We have a motion.
So moved.
So moved. Second.
I'll second.
Okay, second. Okay, discussion. It's easy to be overwhelmed by numbers, isn't it? Okay, discussion. Questions, comments you want to ask Dr. Weber? Any questions? President Perry?
The motion was for the FY13 budget or FY14?
Although in the board book we've listed both, we should consider them separately.
Yeah, I was.
So I think to take the 13 budget first and then the 14.
Okay.
So I'll amend the I'll move to amend the motion to specify the FY13 budget.
Okay. Second that. Okay. Now discussion.
On the capital expenditures, has the state established any priorities on what they will or will not fund? Or where are we? I would assume the science building would fit in, let's say, a high priority.
Yes. The
Who are we competing against?
Well, we're competing against the other universities, first of all, within that universe. And the Illinois Board of Higher Education does go through a prioritization program. We did move up this year, and I think we were number 8 on the list. We've worked this past year to bring legislators into the old structure. Also, the executive director of the Illinois Board of Higher Education and our students wrote letters to their representatives and so forth. So all of these efforts have raised it up in terms of visibility and priority, and our goal for this next year will be to move it up further. Now, more broadly, in terms of capital projects with Illinois, I don't believe there were any new capital funds budgeted or in legislation, but it does seem that at the state level, capital funds tend to go toward public infrastructure projects such as roads and so forth.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mr. Chairman, Dr. Weber, could you elaborate a little bit on the Student Wellness Center? I'm not familiar with what.
Actually, I would prefer to pass that one on to Mr. Nadler, because that is in his area and proposed by Student Affairs.
Sure, thank you. The Student Wellness Center basically would take a number of different kind of professions, disciplines that deal with health, mental health, fitness, nutrition, and really the entire aspect of the students into consideration. What we've been seeing over the past probably 6 years, when you look at the national data that's generated out of University of California, Los Angeles, is increasing percentages of students who are coming to college campuses throughout the country feeling frequently overwhelmed, feeling depressed, really having some challenges that really get in the way of their academic and personal success, also get in the way of retaining the students and getting them to graduate. So what this would do is really bring kind of a hybrid model together to really look at student wellness holistically and total wellness for our students. And this basically would put us in line with what some other institutions are already doing.
And how much is the proposal for that? What's the figure?
It was just over $2 million, $2.135
million. Is that a one-time expenditure or is that an annual expenditure?
I believe it's a mixture thereof. Find the detail on the budget for that. The detail is on pages 26 and 27 of your board book. And as you can see, a lot of the expenditures, hiring a case manager, hiring an advanced practice nurse, hiring a psychiatrist, a lot of those would be base ongoing expenditures.
How are the program priority expenses created and then prioritized? And have they been looked at under the microscope of the newly approved strategic plan?
We develop the program priority requests starting off in President's Council with a discussion of what direction we should move. Should we add new ones? Should we take some off the list? And we decided this year to add a few new options since we had not been successful receiving funding for the four main program priority requests that we've made over the last several years. So we established those ideas in the President's Council, and then working with the areas that are primarily responsible for the idea, we developed these scope statements, which show basically explain the purpose of the initiative, how it relates to the state's public agenda for higher education, how it relates to our strategic plan and our initiatives. And so as you read the narratives throughout, you'll see references to how these ideas would support not just the strategic plan, but also the public agenda.
Any other questions on FY13?
Well, I would like to follow up, because I mentioned this earlier, on the institutional priorities. As you well know, the chance of the these recommendations being supported by the state is probably not realistic. And I think there are institutional priorities that exceed the Wellness Center.
Great.
Unfortunately, I understand the purpose and the reason and the overall goal, but we're in a period of making extremely hard decisions, and I think that will follow. So I'm following up on your comments.
Any others, President?
Well, and of course, the program priority requests and so forth are contained in the fiscal 14 proposal, and depending on outcomes of discussions in Springfield and with the Illinois Board of Higher Education and so forth and so on, we'll be, of course, in touch with the board as to whether any of these things become possibilities or not. In the meantime,
understand that.
In the meantime, the as we meet in our board retreat this coming weekend, we can talk about prioritization, not only for these areas, but the other areas in the university budget as we talk about the overall environment. My guess is online universities, I don't know how they deal with the student wellness issues. The success of a student in a course depends on a lot of things.
Sure.
Clearly, in a residential model university like ours, it's exceedingly important to deal with these issues. I did also want to add that with respect to the fiscal 13 budget, the extensive discussion earlier today in the Audit and Finance Committee was exceedingly helpful to us in the administration to get the comments of the board members and the discussion that was pertaining thereto.
Any other comments? Okay, roll call, FY13.
This is on the amendment?
Yes, it was passed and seconded, and now it's a roll call for FY13 to approve budget for FY13.
But I don't know if we voted on the amendment.
I think, don't we have to vote on the amendment first and then the motion?
I think.
No, you
have to vote on the amendment, I believe. Okay. Whether or not it's approved or not.
Okay. I don't.
All right. Mr. Dively?
Yes.
Mr. Getz?
Yes.
Mr. Cradaville?
Yes.
Mr. Shirley?
Yes.
Dr. Webb?
Yes.
Mr. Welch?
Yes.
Now for FY13, correct? Okay.
That's what I think.
Okay.
Mr. Dively?
Yes.
Mr. Getz?
Yes.
Mr. Cradaville?
Yes.
Mr. Shirley?
Yes.
Dr. Webb?
Yes.
Mr. Welch?
Yes.
Okay. And now FY14 budget submission, and we need a motion for that to accept it.
I will move, Mr. Chairman.
Dr. Webb, second.
I'll second.
Second, Mr. Welch. Discussion.
It's a minor comment, but in regards to the compensated absences, shouldn't we be just accruing that rather than having these one-time bubbles that really can hit one year? And do we not accrue for into those anticipated expenses kind of on a year-end, year-over-year basis?
We do track the total obligation of compensated absences. And with regards to sick leave, there was a period, and I'm not going to be able to get the exact period right. I think it ended in the early 90s when sick leave was compensable, I believe 50 cents on the dollar. And so the number of employees that have compensable sick leave has been declining over the years. And so that's been reducing our overall obligation. But on the other hand, their salaries have been going up, and that boosts our obligation. And so we have tracked the expense of this for many, many years. And it's has peaked as high as $1.6 million in a year. It's gone as low as around $800,000 in a year. If you look at the graph, it's almost a roller coaster of expenses. And so a good 10 or so years ago, we started centrally budgeting for that. And that budget remains constant I think we've actually boosted it a few years back. But anyway, it's been at $1.6 million for a year. But looking forward, I don't think we need to budget that much for it. And so that's some dollars we can reallocate to help deal with the tighter budgets.
Dr. Weber, what level of enrollment was used in predicting the FY14 enrollment, the tuition number, and what kind of stress test can the university sustain for good or for bad?
I see if I don't have that number off the top of my head, but let me see if I know it's in the narrative. The main assumptions are on page 10 of your narrative. I'm not stumbling onto the enrollment. Oh, there it is. For FY14, we have incorporated a 3% drop in enrollment. And so I think that's a conservative estimate. I'm very hopeful that enrollment would not drop that much for FY14.
Any other questions or comments from anybody? Okay, roll call.
Mr. Dively?
Yes.
Mr. Getz?
Yes.
Mr. Cradaville?
Yes.
Mr. Shirley?
Yes.
Dr. Webb?
Yes.
Mr. Welch?
Yes.
I guess if I read the board correctly, that we are pretty much, in light of the economic problems that we're having right now, genuinely concerned about the budget, obviously, and also the future of the budgets. Very concerned about increases in tuition and housing and all this that comes, seems like, every year. And so we just basically want to make sure and look at these figures very carefully and try to make the best decision for everybody. Okay. All right, we'll move on to the depository.
Yes, thank you. This is on page 51 of your book. We have primarily depositories we've been working with through for piecemeal program deposits, along with the university's deposits, and we have several name changes listed there for your approval.
Okay. Motion for approval of the depositories.
I will move, Mr. Chairman.
Dr. Webb, second.
Second.
Dively. Discussion. Anybody have any questions or comments on the depository? Okay, roll call.
Mr. Dively?
Yes.
Mr. Getz?
Yes.
Mr. Cradaville?
Yes.
Mr. Shirley?
Yes.
Dr. Webb?
Yes.
Mr. Welch?
Yes.
Okay, we go over to purchase approvals, and that would be E on the agenda. And Mr. Weber?
Yes, I'm still up. Yes. Thank you. We have four purchase approvals for you today. The first one on page 52 of your book is for a new contract for the campus's copying contract. For the past 10 years, we've been with Watts Copy Service, and that contract expired this year. As is typical, we send this out for bids, and the vendor with the low bid this year was Konica Minolta. And so we're asking approval for a four-year agreement with them, not to exceed $325,000 a year, with an option to renew for three additional two-year periods. I am glad to report that with your approval of this contract, the campus's cost of black and white copies is going to go down by about 10%. And so that'll be some nice savings for our academic and other departments.
Thank you. Motion approval?
So moved.
Moved. Mr. Shirley, second.
Second.
Second. Roll call.
Mr. Dively?
Yes.
Mr. Getz?
Yes.
Mr. Cradaville?
Yes.
Mr. Shirley?
Yes.
Dr. Webb?
Yes.
Mr. Welch?
Yes.
You're up again.
Our second purchase approval on page 53 is for electronic resources for Booth Library. These have not typically come to the board in the past because library books were nice physical things that didn't need to come to board approval, but these days more and more of what's being purchased is electronic resources. And so this has come to your approval at this point. This is a purchase through a system known as Carly out of the University of Illinois. This is not a bid purchase because we are simply purchasing from another state agency. The cost of these electronic resources for our library is not to exceed $330,000, and it's from appropriated funds. And so at this time, I request your approval for this purchase item.
Motion approved.
So moved.
So moved. Mr. Ivey, second.
Second.
Second, Mr. Welch. Discussion. Questions?
Yes. Is U of I the only vendor in the state?
I believe for these resources, yes, for this statewide system. Yeah, this is done through the University of Illinois.
It is a system, or?
Yeah, I don't have a lot of details on Carly, but I know it's a statewide library system that's operated through U of I.
Okay.
So could you explain more what an electronic resource is? Give me an example.
Electronic databases. So instead of, when I was in school, they taught me to go to Reader's Guide to look up things. Well, you don't go to Reader's Guide books anymore. You do these searches electronically. And, of course, more and more journals are in electronic format these days. So it's really, this is a consequence of the ongoing move from print to electronic formats.
Any other questions, comments?
What if we didn't have, I guess I'm struggling to understand the burning platform of approving over a $250,000 expense. So if you could give details about why this is a must-have.
Blair, can you fill in any, or do we need, I don't know if Dean Lanham is here.
Dean Lanham is not here. A good deal of it is, in fact, the electronic journals. We don't buy we don't buy journals anymore. We buy access to the journals. And if you miss a year of the journal, your collection is basically shot. You got a hole in it. So instead of buying the journals, which you never saw before because there's a blanket waiver on those coming to the board, now you're seeing the substitute, which is rather than a piece of paper, it's access to the facsimile of the piece of paper that comes up on a computer screen.
So then this is actually not a cost, if I am understanding your comments correctly, this is actually not an excess cost. This is a displacement of savings by... not subscribing to the paper journal.
That's correct. It's a substitute, okay. One form for another, but this one has to come for board approval, and the other one didn't, so you didn't see it. But yes, it is a substitute.
There are some, I know, university libraries that are refusing to purchase journals because of the cost. In the current format, they've said no more.
Well, there are some attempts to sort of rise up against the publishers and providers of these things, but it's pretty hard to go it alone and be an objector and still have much of a collection.
Okay, any others? Roll call.
Mr. Dively?
Yes.
Mr. Getz?
Yes.
Mr. Cradiville?
Yes.
Mr. Shirley?
Yes.
Dr. Webb?
Yes. Yes.
Welch.
Okay. Our third purchase item on page 54. Is a construction contract for foundation and underground piping for a new ground shop facility. This is a project that's been in the planning stage for some time and has been gone up in priority after consultation with our Council on University Planning and Budget. Our existing area for the grounds shop is rather crowded and is beginning to get to the point of having concerns about the crowding and chemicals that are there. So this will be local funds under the control of our facilities area, not appropriated funds. And this purchase for general construction on the foundation will be a start on this new ground shop project. And so at this time, I'd recommend your approval of this purchase item.
Motion to approve.
So moved.
Shirley, second?
Second.
Second. Questions? Comments from anybody? Roll call.
Mr. Dively?
Yes.
Mr. Getz?
Yes.
Mr. Cradaville?
Yes.
Mr. Shirley?
Yes.
Dr. Webb?
Yes.
Mr. Welch?
Yes.
Our final purchase approval for you is for a new learning management system for the academic side of the house. We've been a WebCT user for some time, but WebCT was absorbed into Blackboard, and with the expiration of our contract with WebCT, we went through a rather major review process to select a new learning management system for the university. And so after serious review of this topic by the faculty and others, the recommended vendor from the process was Desire to Learn. And so at this point, we request your approval for this new learning management system. It's an initial 2-year agreement with an option to renew for an additional 4 2-year periods, not to exceed $650,000 for a 2-year period, or the first 2-year period, and the renewal pricing not exceeding $2.75 million for all option periods.
Motion to approve.
So move.
Second?
Second.
Questions?
Dr. Weber, would this go into place immediately for the fall?
That, Blair, you might.
Well, we might want to ask John Henderson to help us out here, but in fact, it will be running and available for the fall, but people will not be required to switch until spring term. Because that's the point at which the WebCT system actually gets unplugged, that people will have the option during the fall. Did I say that correctly, John?
Okay. We will be running in parallel this fall. Faculty that want to switch, we will have them up and ready to go by the time classes start. So we've been doing some sandbox work with the company. We haven't been allowed until your approval to actually contact companies, but they gave us some guest sites. We've been training faculty.
Is the functionality significantly upgraded from the
yes.
current?
We're no longer dealing with Java or Oracle. We are dealing with HTML5, which gives us greater accessibility for peer reviewers and other students. So, yes, streaming media is much easier. Faculty chose this.
Any other questions? Roll call.
Mr. Dively?
Yes.
Mr. Getz?
Yes.
Mr. Cradaville?
Yes.
Mr. Shirley?
Yes.
Dr. Webb?
Yes.
Mr. Welch?
Yes.
Okay. We'll go to the next item. Mr. Weber again?
I'm still up. Still at bat. For item F, we ask your approval to increase the maximums allowed for certain non-indentured reserves, along with the creation of 4 new non-indentured reserves. As you know, for more than 3 years now, we've been struggling with the cash flow situation in trying to receive our state appropriations on a timely basis. And while that situation is improving some, the improvement is still rather modest. At this point, out of our $46.8 million appropriation, we still have not received $17.6 million of that. And so we have the problem of how do you spend $17.6 million that you haven't received? How do you reserve that money? And so one way we've handled the cash flow is through internal borrowing from other allowable reserves. But a way we handled it last year and the year before and this year again is through the creation of some capital reserves. We consulted with our Council on University Planning and Budget. And we gave them about 8 or so different ideas as to possible reserves that could be created to address some needs on campus. and that council prioritized those ideas for us. And you'll see those four priorities that they established on page 57. And so we are asking, in addition to the increases in reserves that you see listed, we're requesting the creation of four new reserves, one for a building for our Center for Clean Energy Research and Education, CENSEER, a second reserve to address building security upgrades, in particular making the infrastructure adjustments to allow e-locks and security cameras in increased places, a third reserve to address an issue that we're having with some of the glass panels inside of the Doudna, and a fourth reserve to continue progress on the grounds shop facility that you just approved the foundation for. And so with that summary, I ask for your approval of these increases in existing indentured reserves and the creation of these four new ones.
Can I have a motion for that?
I'll make a motion, Mr. Chairman. Get it on the table.
Thank you. Second.
Second.
Mr. Dively. Questions? Comments? Anybody?
Well, Dr. Weber, these are not necessarily spending levels.
That is correct.
Is that correct? You're just creating the fund available in the event that the...
Yeah, these are establishing maximums for the reserves. As we wrap up this fiscal year, we'll see how much unspent money we have available, and we will fund reserves accordingly. Yeah. But I doubt if it'll be up to the full maximums.
Yeah. Does it represent a capital commitment?
If we put money into a reserve, then yes, there is a that money is reserved for that specific project, and it needs to be undertaken within a three-year time period. So yes, there is a commitment behind this.
So, but you don't come back to the board to actually expend the money, is that correct?
Not unless there's a purchase that exceeds the $250,000 level, then we would come back to the board to approve that specific purchase.
Any other comments, questions? Roll call.
Mr. Dively?
Yes.
Mr. Getz?
No.
Mr. Cradiville?
Yes.
Mr. Shirley?
Yes.
Dr. Webb?
Yes.
Mr. Welch?
Yes.
Okay, moving over to item G, and since Dr. Weber's winded over there, we're going to move to Rob Miller this time.
Thank you. We have four labor agreements to present to the board for consideration, and before I go into the first one, I'd like to thank the representatives of the bargaining units that have worked with us, as well as the employee representatives who have participated in bargaining. And I would like to thank the university's lead negotiator, Amy Calvert, for her work on these agreements this spring. It's been a very busy spring, as you can see from the four agreements presented today. The first one is with AFSCME Local 981, and these are the service worker members of this union. A tentative agreement was reached on May 22nd to renew and amend various provisions of the agreement for these 178 employees approximately. Bargaining unit employees will receive a 1% wage increase for each year of the agreement and a 1% lump sum payment not added to base wages this year. This is a four-year agreement, and at this time I would present that to the board for consideration.
Motion to approve this agreement.
So moved.
Second?
Second.
Questions, comments? Roll call.
Mr. Dively?
Yes.
Mr. Getz?
Yes.
Mr. Cradiville?
Yes.
Mr. Shirley?
Yes.
Dr. Webb?
Yes.
Mr. Welch?
Yes.
The next agreement is with the Carpenters Local 347. A tentative agreement was reached on May 11th, 2012, and the Carpenters ratified the agreement on May 17th, 2012. In this agreement, bargaining unit employees shall receive a 1% wage increase for each year of the agreement, which is to run for 3 years. And at this time, we will present this to the board for consideration.
Motion to approve.
So moved.
Second?
A second, Mr. Chairman.
Second. Questions? Roll call.
Mr. Dively?
Yes.
Mr. Getz?
Yes.
Mr. Cradaville?
Yes.
Mr. Shirley?
Yes.
Dr. Webb?
Yes.
Mr. Welch?
Yes.
The next agreement presented to the board for consideration is an addendum that you have received earlier today. This involves the Painters District Council number 58. This agreement is actually in the final year, and there was a wage opener provision in this agreement. The parties have agreed to a 1% lump sum payment not added to base wages for the first 2 years, and the parties agreed to a 1% lump sum increase this year as well. The Painters ratified the tentative agreement on Friday, June 8th. This is the final year of a 3-year agreement, like I said earlier, and we just had to negotiate the wages. So at this time, I would present this agreement to the board for consideration.
Motion to approve.
So moved.
Second?
I'll second.
Any questions, comments? There's a motion made and seconded. Roll call.
Mr. Dively?
Yes.
Mr. Getz?
Yes.
Mr. Cradaville?
Yes.
Mr. Shirley?
Yes.
Dr. Webb?
Yes.
Mr. Welch?
Yes.
The final agreement presented to the board for approval is between the university and the Illinois FOP Labor Council, which is comprised of our university police department officers. A tentative agreement was reached between the parties on June 13, 2012, to renew and amend the agreement. Changes to the contract include updated parking fees, some language changes regarding shift assignments, uniforms, equipment, and wages. The union ratified the tentative agreement on Friday, June 15th, and this agreement would be effective for 3 years. The parties have agreed to a 1.25% increase in wages for each year of the agreement. So at this time, I would present this agreement to the board for consideration.
Motion to accept.
So moved.
Second.
Second.
Questions? Comments? Roll call.
Mr. Dively?
Yes.
Mr. Getz?
Yes.
Mr. Cradaville?
Yes.
Mr. Shirley?
Yes.
Dr. Webb?
Yes.
Mr. Welch?
Yes. Just a comment on the agreements. I certainly appreciate, and I'm sure the board does, Mr. Miller, you and your team and the union teams to bring these agreements to us. Obviously, apparently satisfactory to both sides. Thank you.
Very good. Okay, item H.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairperson. I bring to you a request that the Board of Trustees authorize the President to offer a 3-year contract to Mr. Lee Buchanan as the head women's basketball coach. Mr. Brady Salee, the former head women's basketball coach, took a job at Ball State. The athletic director created a search committee involving the faculty athletics representative and the who also chairs our intercollegiate athletics board, as well as other staff members of the university. They conducted a nationwide search. 4 finalists were brought to campus for interviews, including interviews or open sessions with the community. As a result of that search, the committee recommended, and Barbara Burke has recommended to me, and I've accepted this recommendation, that Mr. Lee Buchanan, who was the head assistant coach under Mr. Salee, be offered the job as head women's basketball coach. I'd be glad to answer any questions you may have about that process or about Mr. Buchanan. He's had a long history as a coach. He's had post-season competition success at the previous levels he's coached as a head coach, the NAIA and Division II NCAA. And he's been the head assistant coach here with Mr. Salee for several years, as our team has had great success in the Ohio Valley Conference.
Motion to accept Mr. Lee Buchanan as the head women's basketball coach. Need a motion?
I move, Mr. Chairman.
Right. Okay. Second? Mr. Dively gave the motion. Who's the second? Second, Dr. Second. Webb. Okay, any questions for Dr. Perry involving this hire? Roll call.
Mr. Dively?
Yes.
Mr. Getz?
Yes.
Mr. Cradaville?
Yes.
Mr. Shirley?
Yes.
Dr. Webb?
Yes.
Mr. Welch?
Yes.
Okay, we go to item I, internal auditing charter revisions, and are you going to do that?
Thank you, Mr. Chairperson. At the previous board meeting to this one, the Finance and Audit Committee reviewed some changes that were recommended to the internal audit charter of Eastern Illinois University. These suggestions were made to bring us further into compliance with State of Illinois Fiscal Control and Internal Auditing Act. There were three additions to the old Office of Internal Auditing Charter. A code of ethics was added. Additional language was added with respect to responsibility for the office, and additional language was added in terms of the responsibility of the Director of Internal Audit. The committee at the previous meeting approved this change, suggested it be brought to the board for its overall consideration, and we reviewed it quite briefly this morning in the meeting of the Committee on Finance and Audit. And if once the motion is made and we get into discussion, Ms. Rebecca Litton, who is our Director of Internal Audit, is here, who could answer any questions you may have with regard to this proposed addition.
Need a motion to approve the revisions to the Eastern Illinois University Internal Auditing Charter.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we bring our auditing charter in compliance with state rules and regulations.
Okay, second?
Second.
Okay, any questions now or comments? Okay, roll call.
Mr. Dively?
Yes.
Mr. Getz?
Yes.
Mr. Cradaville?
Yes.
Mr. Shirley?
Yes.
Dr. Webb?
Yes.
Mr. Welch?
Yes.
Okay, we move to item J, new degree, Master of Science in Sustainable Energy, Dr. Lord.
Thank you, Chairperson Cradaville. It is my pleasure here to present the material for a new Master of Science degree program in sustainable energy. A little bit of background. For the last several years, we have been working to develop basically a portfolio of some related interdisciplinary programs and centers in the areas of sustainable energy and geographic information science. These two are very compatible and mutually supportive. Previously, you approved, and subsequently the IBHE approved, our Center for Clean Energy Research and Education. More recently, you approved the Center for Geographic Information Science. Both of those were approved by IBHE. The faculty on campus has approved a minor in environmental sustainability at the undergraduate level, which will become available for student enrollment in the fall. Previously, we presented to you and you approved a Master of Science program in Geographic Information Sciences, which is scheduled for IBHE approval. They think it may be in the August meeting, so that should be upcoming shortly. And this is a companion to that portfolio of centers and degree programs. The materials appear on pages 64 to 71. I do call your attention to the last three pages. You can see the number of faculty involved across nine different departmental units, truly interdisciplinary. Again, a direct outgrowth of the work we've been doing in sustainable energy. And Dr. Peter Ping Liu, who is serving on release time as our first director of Sincere, has also been instrumental in helping to gather the faculty together to put this degree program before you. So I present the program for your consideration. Thank you.
Thank you. In a motion to approve the Master of Science in Sustainable Energy.
So moved.
So moved. Mr. Welch, second.
I'll second, Mr. Chairman.
Dr. Webb. Questions? Any comments of this program?
I have a couple of questions.
Go ahead.
I presume in your research you took a look at the job opportunities available for graduates with these qualifications?
Yes, in fact, that is part of the approval process, that we do have to provide some documentation of that. This is a growing area for job opportunities. So we believe that clearly satisfies the notion that we offer degree programs that have marketable skill sets when the people graduate. In fact, it's going to be a growing area very quickly.
My other question, I noticed in the paper the other day that Lakeland College is offering a 2-year certificate program in renewable energy and renewable energy management, and a 1-year program in sustainable energy. I realize you're talking about a graduate program, but are there any opportunities for articulation and coordination between these programs?
Absolutely. We have quite a few programs that we articulate with Lakeland, and certainly their programs in the area of energy are going to be programs that should feed students toward us. A number of the faculty listed in this proposal already do collaborations with the faculties at Lakeland, so absolutely.
Any other questions?
How often will we create new degrees like this? Does this happen frequently? Is it something that is relatively unique? And I guess I just can follow up on, so the projections of 40 students by 2017, where's that fit in a degree of confidence?
Let me answer the first part of your question first. How often do we do this? Not very often. On my first 9 years here, I'll be here 11 years in another month. My first 9 years here, we had one new program proposal come through for board approval. Since then, we've had these two. That's the extent of it. And prior to the first one I brought through was our baccalaureate completion program in nursing. And at the time we brought that forward, it had been something on the order of 20 years since there had been a program presented for board approval. So we don't do it all that often, and we try to do it very well considered and do the research on it.
And we eliminate less frequently?
We formally eliminate fairly infrequently, but there are programs that's basically sort of they die and then we eliminate them. I'm trying to think of a polite way to say this. Part of it's because student demand. The other part of it is we want to focus on other programs. So we can control a lot of it through the admissions process by not putting people in programs. But generally speaking, our menu of programs has been very stable. And they evolve, they morph into programs that are more timely without necessarily stopping them and creating a new one.
And the projection of 40 students by 2017?
Peter, do you want to give me a clue as to where that number came from? I wasn't a part of the discussions that put this together.
Well, this program is research-focused and also practical-centered in the sense that this is different than any other traditional program. For example, I coordinated a graduate program in technology, which we have 140 students working on, but we do not anticipate this new program to be as large as the technology program. The main reason is the practical needs for research as well as for practicum that will be done in the Renewable Energy Center. We hope that's going to be a unique opportunity for our students in this country because we have never seen any college of engineering, for example, in this country to have a practicing factory, but we have a practicing site on our campus. That's our Renewable Energy Center. That's a collaboration between the business aspect and the academic side. And that probably will be the main limiting factor for us to go by projecting cost for we altogether for the number of students.
Thank you.
Right. Thank you. Any other questions?
Yeah, just a comment on Mr. Dive's question. And this will go to the BHE, this particular.
Following approval of our board here, yes, it requires BHE approval.
The Illinois Board of Higher Education, once we've acted on this, will have to approve it. Your question about programs, if you want to see the great number of programs that are being approved by the Board of Higher Education, you'll find them operating authority for out-of-state universities, for-profits. Most of the approval of new programs are under those particular auspices. There generally is minimal from the public sector in Illinois. So the vast majority are unrelated to what we do.
Any other comments? Yes, sir.
Blair, you might mention in terms of projections for the nursing program. I know I've seen the enrollment data on that. You might say something about our experience there and what we projected and where we are.
Yeah, when we started the nursing program, we were looking, because it's a baccalaureate completion, it was really essentially a two-year program if one were full-time. And so we had a target in there of having ultimately 50 students in the mature program. It started very slowly for several different reasons, but in the last 2 years, the last year really, it has started to really flourish. And we're going to meet those targets after another year or two in that as a functioning program.
Glad to hear that. Roll call.
Mr. Dively?
Yes.
Mr. Getz?
Yes.
Mr. Cradaville?
Yes.
Mr. Shirley?
Yes.
Dr. Webb?
Yes.
Mr. Welch?
Yes.
Okay, we move on to item K and Dr. Perry. Building location.
Thank you, Mr. Chairperson. As part of the continuing development of our signature in energy, and you've already approved the master's degree earlier this year, you approved the, or I guess it was last year, the creation of the Center for Clean Energy Research and Education, which later received approval from the Illinois Board of Higher Education. The next step is to provide a facility to support the activities of the Center for Clean Energy Research and Education. As Professor Peter Ping Liu just mentioned, one of the opportunities we have at Eastern is the Renewable Energy Center as a hands-on place, a commercial scale facility where our students in the master's program or even our undergraduate program will have that hands-on opportunity with a facility like that. So in terms of where we might add a facility for the support of the Clean Energy Center for Clean Energy Research and Education, it made sense to consider the land immediately next to the Renewable Energy Center. Because the Renewable Energy Center is in a prominent location in the community, and because when we developed the Renewable Energy Center, we went through a series of town meetings with the community to get input about design, and in fact, it was quite helpful in that regard. We repeated that process this time as well. We met on June 16th and June 13th at the Carnegie Library in the Rotary Room in Charleston with attendance of 25 or so individuals at each meeting. The first meeting, we presented the pictures you see here, and I'll step around the podium. This gives you an artist's conception of the look of the building, and we got some comments on that. So this brick masonry and its stone would mimic that of the larger building. We conceive it being to the north of the Renewable Energy Center. We had discussions in the second meeting about where it should be located east-west, and I'll say something about that in a minute, with regard to the overall development of the site. In the first meeting, we received some comments on the design that might make this building be more energy efficient and might provide some, extra design features to it to make it look less boxy, I think, were the words that were used. The facility itself, inside, would have areas for processing of materials for the research scale gasifier, a research and analysis lab, an office, a community learning space, restrooms and mechanical space, and then an idea incubator which could be used by individuals from the Charleston area to develop ideas with respect to renewable energy. The picture that you see on your far left is simply an elevation from the east of the building. Now, what is pictured here is larger than the facility we'll be able to build in the first instance. This is actually the scale we're conceiving of it now. It may get some change in terms of its dimensions, but
It does have about 4,300 square feet.
As to the location, the green area you see on the screen here are potential locations for the building. The red L-shaped region is where the steam tunnels go right now, at least initially, from the Renewable Energy Center over toward the campus. Now, one of the suggestions that was made, that since the this Center for Clean Energy Research and Education laboratory-type building might actually not be, depending on how things develop, might not actually be the last building to be built out there. And since a later building might be one that would be more appropriate to have because of its visibility or community connections, although there will be clearly community connections with this building because we are going to be connecting with the high schools and junior high schools with respect to energy, working with the faculty there. We already have a group put together of individuals from the university and from Charleston School District to look at that. Even so, it may be that there could be a building later in the development of the center that might be better to be placed up near Highway 130. So that was another discussion that was made. Let me step over to the diagram now.
So the suggestions that were made were that instead of the building being up here with its front edge more lined up with the front edge of the Renewable Energy Center, we might consider moving it back this way and reserving this space for another building later up there. The reason this is L-shaped is because we couldn't put it over the steam tunnels here. In case you need to work on the steam tunnels, you can't have a building on top of it. So the site that we are bringing for your consideration would be within this green area. The building as conceived, the front edge, as is depicted on the far left picture, would be facing to the east, that is, to Highway 130. Or 18th Street, whatever you wish to call it. So could be up here, might be back here. These are kind of considerations that we're thinking of. And with respect to the design issues, the process of going through detailed design and coming back to you either late this fall or in the January meeting with respect to an approval of the project, that would come later. All we're asking for right now is the board approval of this area for the site. Now, for your extra information, all this land here is also being used for research. I know for a fact that down here toward the west end, we planted some poplar. That's starting to grow, but in other areas here, we planted some switchgrass and miscanthus. And this supports our research and teaching efforts. And this whole area then will continue to be under development in that way. So I'll be glad to answer any questions. Professor Peter Ping Lu is here too, as well, to answer questions you might have about how the building might be used. As I said today, we're just asking for permission to site the building in that green area. So we don't have a description in terms of GIS. Coordinates of the corners, but that indicates where we'd like to site the building.
Thank you.
Is there any other location considered?
No, the reason that we wanted it out near the renewable energy development.
The question was, were any other sites considered? And the answer to that is no. This would be a facility for classroom teaching and research, and since that teaching and research we feel is intimately connected to our gasification systems out there in the Renewable Energy Center, this was the only site that was considered. In addition, if you will recall, the Renewable Energy Center does have a room in it, a conference room, classroom type setup. So in fact, the people using this building will also be able to use the conference room in the Renewable Energy Center. So that'll give them a standard classroom space right next to a standard wet lab type space with fume hoods and so forth.
How will students get there?
That's part of our wellness program. It's called. Now, the serious answer is that if we need to put this on the shuttle route, we can do that. This will not have heavy student usage, so to the extent that we might need to have some a few parking spaces out there for accessibility and that sort of thing, that would be possible. But it would be a long walk in the winter, that's for sure.
It's just something to consider as this grows, the accessibility is unique compared
right.
to other classrooms at the university.
That's right. And with undergraduate students having a major in it, with up to 40 graduate students involved, our Panther shuttle, we could easily put that on the route and enable access that way as well. That's a good
Need
question.
President Perry, could you possibly provide some insight into what other buildings might go out there in the future, the grand scheme of our renewable our energy program out there?
Well, I think there's the potential, of course, as we move forward in the gasification studies and that sort of thing, that it's possible that some more lab space or some kind of unique or specialized lab space might be out there. On the other hand, if this idea incubator works well, then in the long run, there may be interest in more of a business incubator. In other words, the next stage of development. So those are two possibilities. Another is, depending upon how we connect with the school districts and so forth, there could be some desire, maybe jointly between the school district and the university, to develop another facility, a learning type facility out there. So those are three possibilities. Peter, as you think about the overall evolution of energy studies here, are there some other ideas that I haven't mentioned that might be possible for the development of that site without taking over all of the land? Because the land is important to us too. And Peter, why don't you just come to the all the way, Peter, all the way to the microphone, please. Thank you.
I think the president has covered most of the possibilities in the future, but as we envision that as part of the energy, especially in renewable energy research and development in the future. And this could potentially become our EIU's energy park. And so we have a building, and right now we have those activities going on already. For example, growing, say, energy crops in that area. And the president has already articulated a concept for what we call from cradle to the grave. Yes, and he has already articulated this concept there. So this will become a center of activities on renewable energy in the future. And we hope that will become a very, very attractive point for EIU to have in the future.
Okay.
You know, my goal is to have EIU be the go-to place for biomass as part of renewable and alternative energy. And I think we've got a great start on that, and I've heard Peter discuss this in other venues, that when you think about the different universities in Illinois, their impact on energy studies tends to be related to a specific part of the overall energy picture. For example, at Illinois State, there's wind energy is one of their focuses there because they have a lot of wind farms up there and great opportunity for connections to that. I think UI Chicago, you were mentioning electrical energy and energy efficiency with respect to that. We're making our name in the biomass area.
We need a motion for approval of this location at the center. Then we'll get the discussion.
I'm not familiar with the noise level of the operation of the renewable energy center, but is it a factor in the location of the building?
It could be. One of the comments made in one of the public meetings was that there is some noise coming from presumably the material handling conveyors and so forth of the operation. Now, we've done some analysis and found, and Bill Weber knows the words, but found a piece of machinery that needs some fixing to lower that noise level. There's the potential, we'd have to do some analysis, that by the siting of this building, it could deflect any remaining noise we might have from that equipment. The noise during the times where we're using natural gas, the noise level is, by all accounts, low enough that it's not a problem. So once we put this fix with this material handling equipment and get that going again, we'll see now then what the noise level is as well. I just don't know where it's sited in the Renewable Energy Center, whether it's up high or down low, and then whether the siting of this building could have an impact on that or not. But in the analysis that we did in the original design of the Renewable Energy Center, we did look at EPA regulations and so forth on noise levels and these sorts of things. We did some things to the site, like the planting of trees around the edges to help remediate that to some extent. But we still work on that. We're still sensitive to the input that we're getting from the residents in the area. Bill, did you have anything about that particular piece of equipment, or whether Gary Reed or anyone who's in attendance here could address that?
Well, I don't know the words, like you said, but fortunately on these gadgets I can look up the words. And so we did have a noise concern raised by a couple of the community members, and operators took a serious look at it, tried to track it down, and we feel that the main noise concern is a faulty vibration device within the electrostatic precipitator unit. And so we are hopeful that replacing that little gadget will address the primary noise concerns that we've heard recently.
I'd like the president to remember that.
Yeah. Well, I can't remember it. I don't expect the president to.
But at any rate, once we make this fix and do the analysis, we'll have a better idea whether that's really the source or not. We'll continue to work on these issues as we go forward.
Need a motion for approval of the location for the Center for Clean Energy Research and Education.
I will, Mr. Chairman.
Second?
I'll second it.
Okay. Since we already had our discussion out of order, roll call.
Mr. Dively?
Yes.
Mr. Getz?
Yes.
Mr. Cradiville?
Yes.
Mr. Shirley?
Yes.
Dr. Webb?
Yes.
Mr. Welch?
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, may I make a comment, though? I would applaud President Perry for not only holding these meetings with the community and the neighbors and asking them to come, and I'm sure you were an active listener in those meetings, but that you attended yourself. I think that's great for the university and relationships with the community, so just wanted to acknowledge that.
Okay, move on to action item L, and Dr. Lord.
Thank you. For quite some years, the Tarbell Arts Center has had a code of ethics, which I understand was approved by the President's Council. And at the time that was approved, that was basically all that was deemed necessary. The Tarbell Arts Center is undergoing a procedure to get ready to be reviewed for accreditation. And one of the requirements is that there be a code of ethics, and it also be approved by the board. Hence, it's being brought to you today for that purpose. There have been proposed changes to this as well, and I may refer the explanation of all of this to Michael Watts, who's the director of the Tarbell Center. Generally speaking, they were required by the group that will do the accreditation, and at least in one case, the provisions are in there to prevent a recurrence of some events that occurred at Brandeis a few years ago. But in any event, the Code of Ethics, with the changes from the current Code of Ethics, are highlighted and presented for your consideration. And again, if there are more specific questions, I'm sure Michael Watts can help explain exactly what's going on.
Need a motion to accept this.
I'll make that motion.
Second?
Second.
Okay. Comments, questions?
If you can help me understand why this needs a separate code of ethics policy. Is this not covered under traditional ethics policies across the university?
All the employees of Tarbell would be covered under the code of ethics policies of the university, but our code of ethics doesn't include some of the specific elements of this, which are basically mandated by the accrediting group. But I think I'll ask Michael Watts to make a few more comments as to the reasons behind them.
Dr. Ward's correct. We are bound by the existing ethics provisions for the university, but the American Association of Museums, which is the accrediting body, specifically requests that we have more specific language that has to do with our specific profession and how we move within that profession, concerning especially the permanent collection, how we choose works, acquire works, the accession works, and what our personal lack of gain from a professional position might be in those kinds of things.
I would say this component on page 74, the new edition on the deaccessing of collection, hopefully will modify some of the conflicts that have come into existence where the donor, this collection has been sold simply for a fundraising effort over the opposition, and so this will help prevent, hopefully prevent that in the future.
Any other questions, comments? Roll call.
Mr. Dively?
Yes.
Mr. Getz?
Yes.
Mr. Cradaville?
Yes.
Mr. Shirley?
Yes.
Dr. Webb?
Yes.
Mr. Welch?
Yes.
Okay, we move over to item M, 2013 board meeting calendar. Dr. Perry.
Thank you, Mr. Chairperson. On page 76 of your board book, you have a proposed board meeting calendar for the year 2013. We've endeavored to create this calendar in such a way as to match up with important university dates as well as certain dates that we have to meet in terms of filing reports with the state and developing tuition recommendations and so forth. You will note that one of those days is a Monday, June 17th, 2013. The historical reasons for that one meeting be on Monday may not need to prevail anymore in terms of having a Monday meeting. We will certainly work with the board moving forward. We have plenty of lead time in terms of any changes we might want to make on that date, indeed, as with any other date. Having said all that, though, we do propose and recommend that the board approve the meeting calendar for 2013 as it is presented on page 76 of the board book.
Motion to approve the calendar.
So moved.
Second.
I'll second.
Questions or comments? See some nodding off.
I understand we are going to probably change the date.
Yeah, it's very possible we could do that. Yeah.
Okay. Right.
Yes, the June meeting date is likely to change.
Okay. Roll call.
Mr. Dively?
Yes.
Mr. Getz?
Yes.
Mr. Cradaville?
Yes.
Mr. Shirley?
Yes.
Dr. Webb?
Yes.
Mr. Welch?
Yes.
It's the most action items I think I've ever seen in one meeting. All right, moving over to President's Report, Academic Excellence, Dr. Perry.
Thank you, Mr. Chairperson. Because the strategic plan has six planks in it, if you will, because the information behind those planks is of importance to the board and the public, we have started a series of presentations on each of those. As a reminder, the six planks are academic excellence, financial sustainability, technology, marketing and communication, global competition, and community collaboration. We've already had a presentation on technology and financial sustainability. And so this one is on academic excellence, and our provost and vice president for academic affairs, Dr. Blair Lord, will deliver this report to the board.
Thank you, President Perry. Before proceeding, I do want to give explicit thanks to Mary Harrington Perry, assistant vice president in my office, who helped put it together. If I put this together, it would be just black and white, very uninteresting looking, but she can make it a whole lot more visually enticing. I also need to warn you there will be a little repeat. Dr. Weber did a wonderful job of highlighting some of the exact same things I'm going to highlight here, because, in fact, they do speak to the academic excellence at Eastern. I'm always pleased to brag about academics. I'm very proud of what we do here at Eastern. Just before I took the job as provost here, almost 11 years ago, I had a meeting with someone who'd come from the University of Illinois and was at my previous institution. And he said, you know, you're really going to an interesting place. He said, something really, really special happens down there in Charleston. And I'm not quite sure what it is, but he said it is really special. They really, really educate the students well. And so I was pretty happy to come here, and we do really educate our students well. We've had several sort of handles to describe it. They haven't really been full-fledged marketing handles, but we've used them off and on. One of them was a place that we're big enough to matter, small enough to care, to try to get a sense of the personal relationships that we focus on. We've also talked about having an almost private school-like experience at a public price. Now, of course, we've talked about how we're having to become increasingly private-like in the way we handle tuition and financial aid. And, of course, the pricing is also getting a little less different between publics and privates. But nevertheless, I think that does speak to some of the special points about Eastern. Let me see if I can get this right. Page up. Oh, down. There we go. Let me start by talking about some of the pieces of evidence. And here's where you're going to see some similarity from what Dr. Weber presented. But I'll highlight four separate points I want to share. Accreditations. I've given reports to the board in the past on various accreditations. Most recently, two of the programs in our Lumpkin College, the accountancy program and the School of Business, went through the process. They had a six-year review. That was successful, both the accountancy program and the School of Business as a whole. We're given positive recommendations, and that process is now concluded. And the AACSB, I won't even try to get the acronym right, the AACSB that accredits both accountancy and School of Business, tends to be one of the tougher accreditation hoops to jump over these days. They have quite a high standard, and as I say, we had a six-year extra review because they had some things we were expected to address, and we did a wonderful job on that. Journalism completed the process this year, and I guess it was just a few weeks ago that the final blessing from the accrediting group was received. They had very few comments this time around. The previous cycle, they had a number of comments, but they had really very few comments, with the exception that they continued to urge us to deal with public relations, our PR program, which we actually had two programs, and they were suggesting we probably need to try to figure out how to consolidate that, but we know that anyway. Theater Arts is still in the final stages of their accrediting review right now. We have to provide a response, and then they will eventually conclude their deliberations on it. But all things look positive for that as well. So I'm very pleased at those successful accreditations. Looking ahead, we have a couple more coming up, athletic training in family and consumer sciences. Both of those groups are in the process of assembling the various materials and self-study to present themselves for the review process. Institutional accreditation, you are going to be hearing a lot about that in the next 2 years. We are accredited as an institution by one of the regionals. Ours is the North Central Association of Colleges and Schools, and a particular agency within that organization is called the Higher Learning Commission that deals with higher education. Our next visit comes up in the academic year 2014-2015. That sounds like it's still a little ways away. It's not in terms of getting ready for this accreditation cycle. These accreditations, these so-called regional accreditation for the institution, occur once every 10 years, more frequently if they identify some problems, but typically once every 10 years. So you can see our last accreditation cycle is 2004-05. At that time, they don't give grades per se, but frankly, we would have gotten an A+. If you read between the lines of that report, they found virtually nothing that they wanted us to address and had glowing recommendations and positives about us in almost every single dimension that the criteria looked at. We may have been blessed by being in the very first cycle of institutions being reviewed under a new set of criteria for accreditation. And so perhaps the visiting team hadn't learned what to look for yet. But in any event, we did, in fact, get a sterling review. And anything less sterling this upcoming cycle will be a disappointment. To get ready for these, we have to put together a massive team of people to develop the self-study. It'll be a steering committee. There'll be subcommittees, campus-wide engagement and reflection to put the document together, and that's why we need to start now, because come the fall semester, we'll have to start assembling those teams and having them start doing the work. So you will hear plenty about this as we go forward. Faculty. You know, the quality of an institution in many ways starts with the faculty. That's the embodiment, the human capital of knowledge and wisdom that we want to impart to our students. So let me go on here. This is a couple of pictures, but I have them individually listed. Many faculty awards and recognitions. I tried to pull out some from each school that really were sort of off-campus recognitions that have come to us because others from outside have looked at what our faculty have been doing this year. I know you heard about Dr. David Rabin. He was designated the Case Professor of the Year for the state of Illinois, first such recognition that a faculty member at Eastern had ever received. I'm very, very proud of Dr. Rabin's accomplishments that led to that. You've also heard me talk a number of times about all of the various recognitions that have been flowing to our graduate programs under the leadership of Dr. Bob Augustine. He's put together the so-called First Choice Initiative, keen on one of the goals that were articulated for the academic division, and set in place a peer review process internally that allows graduate programs to seek formal recognition based on criteria that were promulgated by the Graduate Council here on campus. And he's got a national recognitions for the quality of conversations and the just fundamental bootstrapping that this has allowed our graduate programs to go through, the self-examination, reflection, and peer review by their faculty colleagues here on campus. They're tough, by the way. Dr. Roger Beck, many of you know, he also chairs the Council on University Planning and Budget, CUPB. He was recognized by the University of Evansville. He's been deeply involved with that campus, got the President's Medal of Honor. Dr. Charles Foy, a history professor here who's done a long ongoing research project on the slave trade in the 1700s, 1800s, and he has a massive database with the names, and it's quite a research tool, and he's been recognized in a variety of ways, most recently here, the NEH Digital Humanities Fellowship to the University of Denver to continue that work. Dr. Roxanne Gay in our English department received a Critics Circle recognition. I think Dean Irwin told me that the name of that, I'm not going to try to say it again, refers to Haiti. She is Haitian, and she's done a series of essays and reflections about that, that part of her life. Don Holly, sociology anthropology professor, received a Fulbright Research Fellowship to the University of Canada in Alberta, which he will be undertaking this fall. It is quite a recognition for Dr. Holly to receive that. Whoops. How do I go back up? There. That was an unmarked button. continuing faculty recognitions. Chris Kaler in our art department, he's actually had many shows. This show listed here, a solo art show down at the Bruno David Gallery in St. Louis. I jokingly asked Dean Irwin, I don't know where this gallery is. I hope it's more than Mattoon or Lerna. It's in St. Louis. It's a pretty significant gallery. It's certainly not the only such show he's done. He's quite an accomplished artist. Dr. Heidi Larson and Steve Mullen were featured in the U.S. News and World Report story on graduate mentoring. Don't know if you saw that. We probably should try to make it available to everybody. It was a very interesting story on how they mentor their grad students. Dr. Bernadette Laumann received the Illinois Early Childhood Education to the Field Award for her work in early childhood and special education. Dr. Peter Peng Liu, I think we've probably said almost all we need to say today about Peter. He's been spearheading virtually all of our efforts here in sustainable energy in one way or another on campus. Dr. Sally Renaud in journalism, got the Society for Collegiate Journalists National Advisor of the Year Award for her work with the students. And Dr. Linda Reeven got the Illinois Reading Teacher of the Year Award, but Dean Jackman tells me that this is the first year that faculty were really eligible for this award, so she's gotten the first one actually made here in the state of Illinois. I could keep going and going on these things, but I think you get the idea. We have a quality faculty, and that's what helps make Eastern have that special quality that my former colleague talked about. Student achievements. Dr. Weber put some of these same pictures up there. I'll go to the list. Corey Atkins got an award for the best new ad in radio competition. He's a student in our communication studies. Alex Clare, I don't think we've had him before you terribly recently, student, a recent graduate in finance. He was one of the student members of the board of directors of the National Collegiate Honors Council board. Dean Irwin tells me there are six students on that 24-person board, so it's a fairly unique recognition for him to have been able to serve in that capacity. The next four students were all from the Counseling and Student Development, and they were one of two teams from the institution. Studentaffairs.com ran a competition. It was really student-driven. They were told about it. They put it together. It's a virtual case study, digital electronic case study, and they were selected third in the national competition. Donnie Della Rosa, national semifinalist in trumpet competition at George Mason. Jonathan Jones, Dr. Weber mentioned him as well because he was our Goldwater recipient this year. Last 10 years, I think we've only had one other Goldwater here on campus. Very, very prestigious honor there as well. Group of students from Technology and Communication Studies did a video. Bill, I think they actually did that partly with your own people, did they not, to feature the Renewable Energy Center. A few more, political science. We actually are going to have two internships at the Washington Center. Washington Center is a place in Washington that takes students from all around the country who want to do an internship there, places them into any one of the many, many, many government agencies. And so Ryan Plunkett will be there at the White House media team. We'll have another student that will actually participate with the Democratic National Convention under the auspices of that center as well. And Rosa everyone gets their 15 minutes of fame. She was our Jeopardy contestant and became quite the celebrity on campus briefly. Bridget Sanchez, Dr. Weber mentioned her. She is a psychology student. She won virtually every single award the psychology department gave out this year, and then she immediately jumped up from that event, ran down the hall to the Scholar Athletes dinner, got a bunch of awards there, and then she was one of 12 finalists for the Arthur Ashe Jr. Scholar Award. So she's very accomplished, both as a student and as an athlete. A group of students here from Health Studies. This is the second year that they have been recognized by the AHE National Case Study Competition. So they're getting quite a track record there themselves. They had an interesting experience this year because the competition was in Boston. So they went there. They were given a scenario, a particular problem. And they were trying to develop a program to reduce underage drinking in Boston public schools. And they were supposed to present this and have it juried. The power went out, and the conference got canceled. They sent them all home, sent everybody home. And they had to put it together in a video. And then it was juried as a video presentation. So they got to Boston with a Boston scenario problem for Boston, a scenario of a problem, and they had a real one, a power outage in the city of Boston, chased everyone out. Let me see, where am I? The Warbler has recognition. They were finalists this year in the pacemaker competition by the Associated Collegiate Press. And lastly, WEIU News. List two awards here. The truth of the matter is they've got a case down there and they need a bigger case. They collect hardware every single year, regional Emmys, national Emmys. And the reality is they almost have a leg up on many, many, many other schools where students get engaged in the public broadcasting business, if you will, at that institution, the channel, primarily because our station is so small that they have only a handful of permanent employees, and the students actually have to do most of the work, which means the students get to get on camera, they get to produce, they get to write, they get to do the things that in many, many larger public broadcast systems there would be paid staff to do, and the interns would not have those opportunities. We have students that get on the TV by their sophomore year, and it's just unheard of. But because of that, they pick up award after award after award. Notable grant activity, our faculty are successful in securing extramural funding to support their research. Just mentioned a few here, the Child Care Resource and Referral, our Piecemeal, which is basically our Meals on Wheel program, research and sponsored programs, our TRIO grant, WIU. Again, a number of the grant activities that goes on here. Here are some specific individual grants of $50,000 or more. Biological Sciences Professor Robert Colombo, again, Dr. Liu, getting a little repetitious here, Dr. Rabin, for his Chaucer Conference that he actually runs, in addition to being the Case Professor of the Year, and Craig Wheeler from Chemistry, doing something that I can't pronounce, so I will not even try. Foundations of excellence. I've been giving evidence. Sort of, what's the core that holds Eastern's true academic excellence together? I said it starts with the faculty. We have a very accomplished faculty. I think you've already seen that, and they lead to having accomplished students. Our faculty are committed to students. They come here because they want to teach students. That is their first and foremost responsibility when they're at Eastern, and they're darn good at it. And kinds of recognitions that I've just been listing off. It's just a little bit of the evidence of that. We've also been focusing for a number of years on trying to enhance what I call high-impact experiences. They include faculty-mentored student research. We do a lot of that. We're doing more of that. It includes study abroad opportunities. In my years at Eastern, I've been pounding away to try to increase the opportunities in study abroad. We've made a quantum leap or a plateau. We need to continue to do that, but that's a story for another day. But we have a very successful program of study abroad. Other kinds of high-impact experiences include internships, externships, situations where students are put into a new environment and they have to pull knowledge that they've gotten from all sorts of different places. And make sense out of it, solve a new problem, somehow make a whole out of their experiences. We talk about high-impact experiences when I talk about the initiative in integrative learning, which we have used as sort of the organizing principle of the last 3 to 4 years in academic affairs, as a way to talk about the quality of the experience, the way to talk about helping students integrate what's going on in their classes, across their classes, in their personal lives, and connect it all and make a whole opportunity. High-impact experiences are a necessary condition for effective integrative learning. They're not sufficient, but we certainly have to have them, and we focus very intentionally on having more of them. We've also focused on putting the other pieces of integrative learning together, and you can see it down at the bottom of this slide, reflection and review. That is another element of integrative learning. That's where you actually are forced to consciously make the connections. And so we have been having a focus on high-impact experiences, a focus on trying to have intentional reflection, focused reflection, to promote this integration of the student. We also have excellent student support. I think Dr. Weber also mentioned the Student Success Center and the amazing success we've had there, helping students who get on probation to get back off of probation and successfully complete their education. In fact, I think Dr. Weber used the amazing success rate of that. It far exceeded the target rates that were written into the Title III grant, which started that Student Success Center. And the principal investigator who helped assemble that, Dr. Cross, is in the back of the room and led the process that created the new building, or the addition to the 9th Street Hall building in which Student Success Center is located. Student support doesn't begin and end with the Student Success Center, however. It happens in places like the Writing Center, there's math tutoring, but it really extends to faculty individually helping students and supporting them. The last one that I'll mention, although it's not the last on the list here, I've already talked about reflection, is the diversity of campus, the diverse peoples and the diverse perspectives. In the last few years, this campus has become significantly more diverse than it was a decade ago. We are now approaching approximately 20% students from minority backgrounds. Our new freshmen have exceeded those rates, both in terms of the applicant pool as well as the numbers who matriculate. For African-American students, Cynthia may correct me, but I believe we are very close to the percentage that exists in the high school graduating cohort in the state of Illinois. Is that approximately correct, Cynthia? So we have had a wonderful success in helping to diversify in that regard. We have challenges still with Latino Hispanic communities that we do not are not as representative in that, that ethnic group. But I believe that changes the campus for the better. That it's an important part of an education to have a diverse place, to have diverse perspectives, diverse points of view. Planning for the future. I've listed integrative learning. That will continue to be one of the means by which I want to promote, we seek to promote the rigor, the high expectations that goes with the Eastern educational experience. Rigor is part of the strategic plan explicitly, and there are elements that are written into the strategic plan that will help us promote rigor. Academic affairs will work on those, but it also is working on everything else we can think of to promote rigor. Enrollment management and fiscal management is not necessarily academic excellence, but if we don't have students, we're not going to be a very excellent institution. We've talked long and hard about our challenges in enrollment. You all know that we've talked about our consult with Noah Levitz, the consulting firm brought in to give us advice on recruitment and retention. They gave us several reports as the year changed from fiscal year or from calendar year 11 to 12. It had something on the order of 175 specific recommendations in their various reports. Some were very high level, talked about having a more focused organizational structure for enrollment management. We also have made a decision to have more focus in our marketing area. Those are very high-level kinds of recommendations. The recommendations also included such things as changing the strategies by which we award scholarship monies, targeting scholarships more intentionally than we have in the past. It included recommendation to have more scholarship money. President Perry responded on that one and did commit more funds this year. It talked about how to manage data and mine the data in the admissions office, and we're making very aggressive steps to try to elevate the professional activities, the procedures that are used in that office, and provide support there for the next cycle. I can say with some pride right now that the admissions office, for the first time since I've been here, is finalizing a draft of a recruitment plan for fall of 2013 with very specific actions, very specific measures, metrics that will have to be watched weekly for each and every one of the counselors. So we are making some very dramatic steps in that area. I have asked my Council of Deans, the deans, to provide me with evaluation materials. I didn't ask for them last week when my evaluation materials were due to President Perry. I asked for them next week or the week after, but I explicitly assigned them to go to the academic, the strategic plan, the academic excellence section, and talk specifically about how they're going to align some of their initiatives in the coming year with that part of the strategic plan. So we will be consciously aligning what we are doing in each of the colleges with the planks of the strategic plan, as well as continuing to work on academic excellence overall. Curricular revitalization, we took a step in that regard today. I talked about how we've built a cluster, a portfolio of programs in sustainable energy and geographic information science, with centers, majors, minors, and I've listed a few other opportunities before us. Fine arts management is one that's being considered very carefully by the leadership in the College of Arts and Humanities, Lumpkin College, and the Graduate School. And we have a number of other initiatives underway to continue to refresh the curriculum and make it relevant, keep it relevant. President Perry also asked that I perhaps give a few moments of reflecting on my 11 years and what I've seen at Eastern. I still believe that it's true that something special happens here between students and their faculty. Eastern is a very special place, and you hear that, and I know the president talks about this when he talks to alumni, how passionate they are about Eastern and the time that they spent here at Eastern. There have been a lot of changes, however, in the 11 years that I can reflect on. In some ways, I argue that we've sort of grown up academically. We've grown up in the sense that technology was really, really sort of a fledgling operation when I arrived here. We have had technology presentation centers in all generally assignable classrooms now for 5 or 6 years, and we keep that refreshed. There are lots of campuses around the country that still don't come even close to having that kind of technology infrastructural support. We also have the expertise to help our faculty with it. Mentioned study abroad, now we've grown that. There were handfuls of students doing study abroad, and now it's measured in the hundreds. Our fine arts programming obviously has had a quantum leap, partly with the Doudna building, but because of what we're doing in that as well. Honors has continued to be a strength of this institution. We have a wonderful honors program, and people come to us because of our program. Our student faculty research, the mentoring that goes on there, has continued to be a strength. And as I look ahead, I see the same challenges I think we all do. Challenges, fiscal challenges, exacerbated sometimes by the regulatory challenges. And then sometimes even just sort of our own sense, higher education doesn't move fast and we tend to have a little inertia. So we have some challenges like considering what we need to do sort of collectively as the disruptive competition becomes more present to us, as Dr. Weber mentioned earlier. So with that, I hope you have a little bit of sense of some of what the academic division is working on and some of the bragging points. Thanks, Mr. President.
Thank you. That's great for you.
Unless the board has any questions, so to ask a board.
Does the board have any questions or comments they'd like to make to Dr. Lord?
Yes. Go ahead, Joe.
Dr. Lord, I guess when you talk about the foundation of academic excellence, examples of excellence, I would just think that there would be more, and I'm sure you have all the statistics, but I'm not up to date on the input side of that. When we talk about our students and from a ACT score, class rank, GPA, kind of the input side of the university, it just seems like in the past, in other associations, other roles I've played at the university, I heard more about that, and that we continue to try to keep that bar high while keeping enrollment up, and I don't hear as much about that anymore. I don't know if that's just, hey, that meeting's coming next quarter or what have you, but I just, what can you tell us about that?
I can tell you a good deal. I just happened to choose other things to focus on. It wasn't a matter of trying to dodge the question.
Yeah.
It sort of didn't hit me as something that I was, and I knew I had a bit of a time limit. our ACT profile has been essentially unchanged for 15 years or more. We hover right around the 22 score as a composite. It's an average. It'll go up or up and down half a point on average. And that has continued. In fact, with some of our tiered scholarship awarding that we're doing, we're hoping to slowly see a little bit of a bump in that. And we did for a little while, at least in terms of the students who deposited. I think it's settled back to about the average right now. So in terms of that measure of student profile, our profile is essentially unchanged right straight along. What has changed, of course, and this is revealed in the enrollment side, is that we have had a decline in enrollment that now extends for about 6 years. Right. And as I've explained, I think, to this group, but certainly to many, many groups in recent months, the first couple of years it was intentional that in 2006-07, we had our high water mark. We had over 12,300 students here in the fall. The assessments, the analysis that had been made a few years before that was that we really needed to be about 11.6 to 11.8 in terms of total enrollment. So when we were at 12.3.5, we were sort of cracking open at the seams. And we'd had a couple of gigantic freshmen, new student classes come in. So we were consciously trying, we can't grow. We got to shrink a little. So we dropped back, and we had a couple of years of fairly flat enrollments at about the level we targeted, about 1,800, 1,750 to 1,850. 3 years sort of hung right there. In the last 3 years, it took a turn down, and it was about a year and a half ago that I got concerned enough about that I approached the president and said, I think we need to do something differently. And that's when we started the odyssey of getting consulting advice here to give us that outside perspective and hopefully some ideas that we just weren't coming up with on our own. People working very hard, but so you'll see that the numbers of people approaching us with applications, while still high, did decline over the years. The ACT, the profile, has remained remarkably stable.
I guess I just, when we're over our target, we consciously want to shrink a little bit. We can be more selective, and now that we're in the need for growth, I just wouldn't want to see us lower our standards or stretch too much to hit those goals. So I know that's a balancing act, but personally that's how I feel.
I joined the president with some opening remarks at the start of this year, and I said I picked on the old three R's as the provost's focus, recruitment, retention, and rigor. And I cannot talk about recruitment and retention without talking about rigor in the same set of remarks, because they all three have to be important, and you can't give up rigor just to get your recruitment up and your retention up. I'm chief academic officer. I passionately believe high expectations.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. Did you have some?
Yeah, go ahead. Okay. You have a question?
Oh, you got a question?
I have a question, yeah. Blair, I think the most definitive measure of student learning is testing the students to determine whether they have learned the objectives of the course or the program. And I know universities have traditionally rejected the idea of external testing, which probably for good reason. But to what extent are we gathering data that would suggest, for example, one of our objectives, I think, is critical thinking,
yes.
Writing. To what extent do we have data that would show that as students move from the freshman class to the sophomore class, junior class, that they have actually advanced in these areas?
Several years ago, at the initiative of President Perry, we joined and started participating in the System of Accountability, the VSA, and as part of that participation, we had to do some national testing. There were two different tests that we used that we had to administer, and then we had to report the results, and those results are out there on our webpage. This coming year, we will need to redo them to continue our participation. In other words, every 3 years, you have to update it. They showed both very strong successes as well as some areas that we weren't quite so happy with. And I'll be very interested to see the next cycle of those tests to see whether or not we've had any changes. And I shared a good deal of that information, and I think, with the members of the board that were on, that were still here a couple of years ago, and I'll be doing the same when we get that information back this time.
Well, we look forward to seeing that data.
Mm-hmm. So do I.
I have a comment on your three R's. Mm-hmm. If we return to performance-based funding for a moment, under performance-based funding, two of the criteria that are going to be utilized is retention and completion rates. I have seen nowhere in that report anywhere a mention of rigor. And there may be an inherent conflict with those goals. What's going to give? Is my question. I think it's yet to be determined. But
well, I suspect I've already answered it. That may be their goal, but that's certainly not my goal, and I don't think it's Eastern's goal. The president can answer for himself, but rigor is going to stay a part of what we believe in. Statistically, as you know this, Mr. Welsh, I could have shared this, Mr. Dively, when I was answering your question. We graduate students at rates. People complete their programs of study here at rates well in excess of the average at regional comprehensive institutions, and we retain students from freshman to sophomore year at rates well in excess of the average for regional comprehensive universities. In fact, as Noel Levitt's consultants put it, we actually have retention and graduation rates that are consistent with institutions that are at the next tier up in the pecking order. So I think we have some headroom to keep talking about rigor in any event. But that, I'm the academic guy. It's going to have to stay rigor.
Okay, anything else? Anybody? Okay, we'll move on then to item B, report from the board chair. And since this is my first meeting as this time around, that is, as board chair, there's not much I can say about the last few months or so on as board chair. But I would like to say something about basically where we're at. As I start my ninth year as a member of the Board of Trustees, I like to reflect and remember back to August of 2004 when Trustee Welch, Trustee Webb, and myself were all appointed to the board by the governor. Surprisingly, a few years later, he went to prison. I don't know if there was any connection to that or not, but anyway, I was thrilled. We're all together in that. I was thrilled to death because I had spent four of the best and sometime the longest 4 years here at Eastern Illinois University. I was proud then, and I'm proud now to be able to give back to the university. When I was first appointed, after not really coming back too often, I was very active as a teacher and a coach and a principal, and then summers were working and so on. It was difficult to come back. I was so excited when I first came up to my first board meeting that I came very early around the campus. I stopped at the Ball Diamond, and surprisingly, they had built a new gym on my Ball Diamond. And I went to my old history department, and I found out that one of my old teachers, they named a building after it, Dr. Coleman. My history advisor, Dr. Sterling, and other advisor, Dr. Walt Elmore, were still active and came to talk to me. My good friend, and I mean really good friend, Dr. Jerry Heath, was still active here, and he kept me going for 4 years in baseball. It was great, and it was. But these people still gave me a connection to the university after all those years. Now, I've suggested that all board members, and especially the new ones, come to the campus once in a while when they're not having a board meeting. Just come to the campus here. I tell them to wear their identification tag so people know a trustee is on campus and are interested. Not just here for tuition, housing, fee increases, decisions, or okaying other responsibilities of the members, but here to see all the positive activities that are occurring every single day by our outstanding teaching staff, support staff, and others. Especially we get to see the outstanding efforts of our students, not just on the athletic field where it seems prominent, but also in the classrooms. I've been here a number of times to see things of this sort take place. I've been very fortunate during my 8 years to have had two outstanding university presidents in Lou Henkin and William Perry. They surrounded themselves with outstanding vice presidents, deans, and heads of departments. It's not an accident that Eastern Illinois University is an outstanding university. It is a very long work of love for a school that dedicates itself to not only awarding an outstanding education, but to provide a host of memories that last a lifetime, and in my case, I'm still remembering them. My mother, Norma, was right in August of 1956 when she said I needed to go here after having a problem making a choice of schools. As usual, mothers are always right. But that's my side of the thing. Now we'll move on to the next one, report from the committees, and I'll entertain some short reports of the meetings here. So who's first here? Let's see. What's that? Okay, the finance and audit. Do you have anything, Dr. Webb?
No.
Okay, how about the that's about as short as
that's
you can
short.
Get. How about the professional conferences? How about the conference that you went to this year in Washington, D.C.? You have any kind of anything you want to say about that?
Well, I've heard other people's report on their visit to conferences, and therefore I won't say anything about it. No, it was a very great experience.
Okay.
And I've met with President Perry and passed on some of the ideas, and I gave you the information I received regarding board chairs.
Okay. And Mr. Welch, do you have anything?
The conference that is listed here that I attended is the National Conference, the National Center for the Study of Collective Bargaining, Higher Education, and the Professions, of which Eastern Illinois University is a member. The conference is sponsored out of Hunter College in New York City, and the conference location was the Graduate Center of the City Universities of New York. This particular conference brings together essentially it's a labor management conference. It's the only one of its type in the country, and it has been in existence for 39 years. So it attracts representatives from states that have collective bargaining in higher education. So we're talking about New York, Michigan, Pennsylvania, California, et cetera. I was in charge of a panel that delved into the question of the funding crisis in higher education and its impact on the local institution and the communities that they represented. On my panel was a representative from the Pennsylvania State University System, a panelist from the California State University System, a representative actually from the president of the UPI, which represents Eastern, and then also a professor from the medical school in the University of Puerto Rico. Essentially, the representatives are facing the same problems. There's nothing specifically unique to each of those respective locations. And we came up with more problems, unfortunately, than solutions. So we're still in the same general problem with essentially the drop in state funding. Of the representatives, probably Pennsylvania is worse than Illinois. There was a recent list that came out of the highest tuition costs in public universities, and there must have been five or six of the Pennsylvania state universities than the highest tuition costs in the country because of the state funding. So that would conclude my comments on that report.
Thank you, Mr. Welch. And item E, report from constituencies. I don't think we have any now.
Nope.
And then, Mr. Weber, summary of purchases.
Yes, you have a summary of purchases ranging from $100,000 to $249,999 on pages 82 and 83 of your book. You'll notice, as is common for this time of year, a number of textbook purchases for the Textbook Rental Center. Beyond that, either Treasurer McCann or I'd be glad to answer any questions you may have on any of these purchases.
Comments, questions? Item G, University Highlights, Dr. Perry.
Thank you, Mr. Chairperson. I would bring a couple of items to the board's attention. You've received a number of university highlights in your book, starting on page 84, but I would note that we were listed in Princeton Review's Green Colleges Guide. That's essentially a top 10% recognition. There are about 3,500 colleges and universities. 322 are recognized, and we're one of them. It's a distinct honor. Also, we earned Tree Campus USA status, and that's about a top 5% recognition there. Also, in addition to what was in your book, you received this press release, which is dated today. Eastern Illinois University is recognized by the U.S. Department of Education and the Corporation for National Community Service for its commitment to the community through service and service learning. We're on the honor roll of that. It's 513 institutions, and that's a top 15% in the nation. So these are all recognitions developed by outside agencies, and those are very meaningful to us because a lot of people put in a lot of work on these areas of sustainability and community service. Very, very important. And then finally, I was pleased to be in Nashville for Coach Spoo's induction into the Ohio Valley Conference Hall of Fame. As you know, Coach Spoo was a great coach here, 50-year career overall, and 25 of those at EIU. Thank you for allowing me to comment on these highlights.
Okay, no other matters up here on the agenda. Thank you all for holding up this long, and we stand adjourned.